I'm connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Hey, and welcome to NetSurfer Pro. I think this is technically our second episode, if we're counting the pilot we did and recorded like 8 months before this one. I am Matt Craig, and I am joined by my co-host and cohort,
Galen Wilson. Nice to be here.
Isn't it funny that cohort and co-host have one letter difference, and those letters are one letter different? Does that
make
sense?
I think that is... I don't know if that's funny so much as fun. Like, the fact kind of fun?
Yeah, that's kind of like what I think we're talking about today, is something that is kind of funny, but also not. Kind of fun, but also not. But also, I don't know, it bounces around. Today we're talking about the Mouth albums, which, if you're not in the know, does not make any sense. If you are in the know, you're probably turning up your volume, because this podcast is very quiet. If you've been on the internet, and by on the internet, I mean in the last 20 years or so, you might have heard of the Ultimate Showdown of Ultimate Destiny, Animutations, Brody Quest, Potter Puppet Pals, or more recently, something like Bustin' or Wow Wow. These are all made by one person, Neil C. Sirega, a multi-talented, self-taught content creator.
And content creator is really an accurate term, because he isn't a YouTuber or a internet personality into himself even. It's more that he creates very highly diverse content in so many fields. I believe he's had projects of, creating a video game. He's done music for documentaries. We're going to be talking today, just music tracks. He has a band called Lemon Demon. He is not himself like a sort of, Jax Films-esque,
right,
or
he doesn't put himself out there.
Yes, but like through his content, Yeah, we can cut that part out.
Anyways, I think it's interesting, because I've definitely talked to people who have heard of like three things Neil C. Sirega has done, but have not heard of Neil C. Sirega, which is definitely interesting nowadays when like internet personalities, like you said, are more common. Neil C. Sirega has done animations, music, animations to music, weird film edits. I think was it him or Andrew Hussey that did Star Trek TNG edits? I don't remember. He's done mashup albums, which is what we're talking about.
Yes.
These are four albums as of the day of recording, all with the word mouth in the name. This is because it started with Mouth Sounds, which has like five or six mashups involving Smash Mouth. Now,
specifically Smash Mouth's All Star. Of course.
One of them's Walking on the Sun, actually. Fun fact. When I say mashup, just to be a bit more concise, this is, putting two different songs together or more, or not songs, but audio experiences.
which I do quite like to talk about specifically, but yes,
yeah.
Continue.
So in sort of like internet fad trend taxonomy, mashups are pretty diverse nowadays. But sort of all-star mashups became their own sort of subgenre. And I think at the time, this was like, the first one was like a pretty high quality version of that. But I think Neil C. Sirega's style has really influenced the rest of the mashup scene. I'll talk a bit more about the mashup scene in particular. But first, I just want to introduce the first album we're talking about, Mouth Sounds, which was released in April 2014. The title is sort of a triple Nintendo, triple entendre.
triple Nintendo is actually where my uncle works.
Yeah.
My triple uncle.
For one thing, singing is a type of mouth sound. All Star is a sound made by Smash Mouth. And it could sort of be a parody of Pet Sounds, the Beach Boys album, so that the album title itself is a Smash Mouth mashup, a smash-up. something kind of interesting for one thing, the way this was made is interesting to me because Neil literally found the stems from the game Rock Band. So in yes. Rock Band, you know, you play different instruments, and so it has tracks that are just the vocals, just the background bass, just the melody. And he was able to use those to make these really high quality mashups despite not having, you know, like the master tapes or whatever.
Yes, one of the most interesting things with these mashups and kind of the, I don't know if he started the trend, but the trend that is showcased in Mouth Sounds is that a lot of meme songs used in mashups, which we'll talk about later, are things that have their own source music. So what comes to mind is the Space Jam theme. So if you want to put the Space Jam theme to anything, you have to keep in mind that there is no localized vocals. So you will have that drum beat, you will have that synth, and you will have that underneath everything else that you would put to it. But with the localized sounds, you can take just the vocals from one song and just the instruments from another song entirely and mash them up. Meaning that, you know, so the second track on Mouth Sounds is Modest Mouth, which is a mashup of Smash Mouth's All-Star and Modest Mouse's Float On, where it is effectively just the instruments of Float On and just the lyrics of All-Star put to it. And yeah. I don't know if this started with Neil, but I feel like that influence very much was what kind of kicked off other trends of internet mashups, especially when you get to like We Are Number One mashups, which got very popular in 2017, where, you know, having the localized sounds means that if you can completely remix one of the tracks, completely remix just one instrument, the key instrument, then you can put that to various other songs, be they memes or, you know, video game soundtracks, what have you.
Right. We Are Number One is actually an interesting case because the creators of that song actually released the stems because people were making mashups with it.
Yes.
But I don't know if it's really a trend that started with Neil as far as internet mashups in particular. I mean, like you said, there were like Space Jam edits before him. And even then, there were a lot of like anime theme song mashups.
Yes.
Sort of a really common trend or an idea with these is that the concept of the mashup would be so bizarre that if it sounds good, it's like a setup and a punchline. A lot of times it would be based around the concept of the mashup itself. I think one example is Urawa Omote Bustas.
Yes.
Which is Urawa Omote Two-Face Lovers, which is a Vocaloid song. And it's a few different Busta Rhymes songs.
Yes, it's his verse from Look At Me Now. I cannot remember the source. Yes, I think.
By Lil Jon?
There might be another one as well, but right. Like the setup of the song
is the third one, I think it's called. Okay. But yeah, the setup of the song, like you were saying.
Yes, the setup of the song is effectively just the idea of a Hatsune Miku song, a Vocaloid song, that has Busta Rhymes rapping over it, and you wouldn't, you know, it's you would not believe that these two things would go together at all, but because of the magic that Triple Q is the one who made it, I believe.
I think that was Truon.
Yeah,
Truon has a lot of other good ones in this vein, but yeah.
Yeah, because of the effort that Truongasm puts into making it sound good, it ultimately sounds very, very fitting. Yeah. And that's sort of that's one of the interesting facts, which I know you have a lot of facts about the other albums, but one of the only ones I know about this the first album, Mouth Sounds, is that Neil kind of made the made effectively the entire album and made a lot of the specific songs in it as a joke, just as something to kind of get people a little bit angry, quote unquote, because he would take two songs that do not seem like they would mix at all and just smash them together.
Yeah. A lot of these are founded on wordplay. Like you said, Modest Mouth earlier. Great name for a song. Yes. I'm a Let It Be. Let It Be by the Beatles and I'm a Bee by Black Eyed Peas is definitely A, something that would make people mad because they shouldn't go together. B, a setup and punchline based off that. And C, wordplay.
Yes. And wordplay is a very consistent theme in a lot of the other albums as well that we'll get into,
right?
Where, like, with the titles and with the lyrics that he edits, it a lot of it just sort of serves a very funny line or a very funny name,
right? A lot of it I feel like is kind of an elevator pitch, like you know, the album the song title has to sell you on the song, sort of.
Yes.
But also, I wonder how much of it is just, like, he got ideas based on these things. Like, Mullet with Butterfly Wings is Bullet with Butterfly Wings over Everybody's Working for the Weekend. And just, like, the name of it is so good, I almost feel like he came up with that first. I don't know, but I can't imagine it any other way.
It's, yeah, it, a lot of the names of them really do seem like it's the sort of thing that you just say as a joke and then you have to make it out of the joke. Mouth Sound specifically is one of the, I believe, if I remember correctly, a lot of what is in Mouth Sounds is actually just various mashups he had made beforehand and then just sort of compiled them into one album with a couple of extra songs. And it should be noted also that all of these albums are completely free. All of them are completely on the internet. He doesn't specifically sell them or anything. He has a Patreon. But like, you know, if you want to listen to them, if you have not already, there's no barrier to entry.
Right. I would especially recommend looking up the Mouth Experience on YouTube, which is a YouTube video that compiled all of the songs, but also includes their samples, like their sources, and any other Easter eggs, of which there are numerous, which we will talk about right now, including. So every album cover, pay attention to those because they all kind of have their own things. On the first album cover on Mouth Sounds, in Neil's glasses, in like the reflection of it, is Shrek, which of course All-Star is commonly used and associated with Shrek. Also, the metadata for every song is another important part where Easter eggs are hidden. And in Mouth Sounds, the metadata for every song lists its creation as May 4th, 1998. Sorry, 99, which is the release of All Star.
Yes, and the Easter eggs of Mouth Sounds are also very important because the Mouth Sounds is a album specifically that uses All Star quite a bit, but Mouth Silence, which is the next album, was created as a sort of specific parallel to not have any direct references to All Star by Smash Mouth,
right?
Except for a couple of Easter eggs,
right? And we'll get to that in a bit. I want to talk about a few songs specifically on Mouth Sounds first that we haven't touched on.
Yes.
First of all, the first song, "Promenade Pictures at a Satellite" or "Promenade Satellite Pictures at an Exhibition." Sorry, it's a long title. Is the, you know, the somebody from All Star, that is pitch shifted to the song "Promenade Pictures at an Exhibition," which is a composition composed by a man named Modest Mussorgsky. Sorry if I mispronounced that, but his first name is literally Modest. So it kind of transitions into Modest Mouth that way, which is really good. There's also, other than like the kind of two song, three song mashups that were pretty common at the time, there's a few standouts that kind of set the tone for the rest of the series. There's Dough, which has a ton of different small samples that are layered over itself, like the theme from Doug and Baby Got Back, I think, is at some point there.
Yes, it is. It is.
It's actually through most of it, I think. And of course, Homer Simpson saying Dough. Vivid Memories Turn to Fantasies is heavily modified Men in Black by Will Smith, but it has like bee buzzing sampled in as well as the word bees. It has a bit of sentence mixing, which is something that will appear much later in the next album. But also, it's not a mashup. It's more of just an edit of one song.
Yes, that is one of the important things as well, is that with Mouth Sounds specifically, and I believe kind of only to an extent, there's quite a few songs that are not a mashup as much as they are just taking one song and editing it to do something with it, something fun.
Right. Like Sharpest Tool in the Shed, which edits All Star to be like a very industrial sound.
Yes.
The last one I wanted to mention is Tears in Chocolate Rain, which takes the vocals from Chocolate Rain and puts them in the audio from Blade Runner's Tears in the Rain monologue. And this is one of the best and like most wild things Neil does that appears in all the other albums, is these like soundscapes where he recontextualizes vocals by putting completely different audio behind them. In this case, it makes Chocolate Rain like even more dramatic and kind of depressing, which is more or less what the lyrics were supposed to be, by replacing the kind of upbeat, poppy piano music with Tears in the Rain.
Yes, that's one of the very powerful things that Neil Cicerega is able to do, is the full recontextualization, like you said.
He's able to do it. He has too much power.
Has science gone too far? It's the same style where it kind of takes just two unrelated things and mashes them up based on one, possibly based on like one common thread, in this case rain, but it makes it very like it works very well, and it makes the song pop and actually kind of sad, in like sadder in a way. Right. One of the best songs that didn't actually make it into an album that I quite like is, oh gosh, what is it called? It's the mashup of, it's Say It Ain't SoCal.
Oh yeah, I believe. Say It Ain't SoCal. Yes.
Say It Ain't SoCal is
it's Beverly Say It Ain't Hills. So.
Yes. It's Beverly Hills by Weezer?
They're both by Weezer.
Okay. Yeah, it's Beverly Hills by Weezer and Say It Ain't So by Weezer. And the lyrics are Beverly Hills and the music is Say It Ain't So, and it turns this like aspirational song of Beverly Hills and the sort of like great fantasy into this like very, it sounds like a, you know, dark indictment of the vapid lifestyle of California.
Yeah, the best part about that is it just changes the key of the vocals to a minor key.
Yeah, but like, it's,
I think that's one of the things that makes Neil stand out so much with these albums, is that like, it's not just that the songs are used to evoke like comedy or like good listening, it's that they're used for all these other emotions.
Yes. And one of my favorite things, and it's only present in one, maybe a couple, of specifically Mouth Sound songs, is I like it when Neil Cicerega recontextualizes very corporate songs or jingles or what have you. And it's a lot more present than the next album. But specifically, Alanis, at the end of Alanis, which is Alanis Morissette's You Ought to Know, set to Everywhere You Look.
The
Full House theme. But at the very end of it, he just plays one jingle after another of like, you know, the the Warner Brothers jingle, the 20th Century Fox jingle.
Okay, I was just gonna say, I just realized that You Ought to Know is supposedly about Bob Saget, and so that's why it's played to the Full House theme.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Well, there you go.
It begins, I think, a little bit of a trend where he takes very corporate sort of like meaningless jingles and turns them into something beautiful. It's not very beautiful in Alanis. The joke very much seems to just be that it's just jingle, 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 jingle with no real context. But in Mouth Silence, that's a lot more prevalent with stuff like Best or Numbers to an extent.
I think we're going to just get into Mouth Silence now.
Yes. So yeah. Mouth Sounds, just to sort of close it out, Mouth Sounds is a great first album, but it really gets special with Mouth Sounds onwards.
You mean Silence.
Mouth Silence onwards. Because Mouth Sounds was a lot of different songs you made at different points in time and then strung them together, whereas Mouth Silence onwards seems to be a lot more very specifically cohesive to a shaky extent. I definitely could not defend that if challenged, but like it's a lot more. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say I think I can explain why when we get to it.
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to start with so Mouth Silence was released in July 2014. So 3 months after Mouth Sounds was released. Very busy 3 months, I guess.
Yes.
According to Neil, Mouth Silence exists in an alternate universe where Smash Mouth never existed, and so All-Star doesn't directly appear on the album. It does, like you said, exist in several Easter eggs. So, for example, the word some is incredibly quiet between the first and second verse of the song Wonderwall. In the final song of the album, Piss, the phrase somebody once told me is written in Morse code. The album's metadata has comments that are one character, where it, when arranged by the song's alphabetical orders, spells out so much to do, so much to see. The song Transmission, which is like a number station that just says different numbers, if you type those numbers in ASCII, it spells Smash Mouth. And then probably the most notable one, All-Star is very, very faintly overlaid over the entire album, but it's slowed down by 1,728%. So it's inaudible unless you speed up the entire album.
Yes.
So, like, there's all these faint whispers of All-Star, which never existed in this universe. And so, outside of those whispers, it doesn't exist on the album. Almost like a rejection of everything that the previous album was.
Yes. And also, just to highlight the joke as well, it does need to be appreciated that Mouth Sounds is the first one, and it's All-Star. Mm-hmm. Whereas Mouth Silence does not contain All-Star in any explicit way. Right. I'm doing really good at saying things twice today. So, you know, Mouth Sounds, Mouth Silence. You get the joke, I believe.
Yeah. Also, on the album cover, he's doing a little shush pose, but his finger and thumb are in the shape of an L.
Unfortunately, not on his forehead, however.
Right. Also, the image in his eyeglasses this time is the hamster dance, and Semi-Charmed Life appears at the start of the song, but pitched up to about the same pitch as the hamster dance, and then both songs appear in the final song of the album as well, both Hamster Dance and Semi-Charmed Life, to kind of bookend it. So, this is really, I think, where Neil's style starts to cement itself. It builds off a lot of the concepts from the first album beyond just the two song mashups. So, like, similar to how Doe was, like, I don't know, Doe was a lot of songs overlaid together, some of which were pretty short samples. That appears in more of a organized force with songs like Best. where it takes a lot of these small samples and overlays them into one song, but in this case it has a running theme, which is the word best. So Best of You by Foo Fighters, the Folgers jingle, another jingle,
One Direction's best song,
right,
ever.
Best song ever. Yeah, so like this is a thing that appears throughout all the other albums, is these like concept mashups where it's a whole bunch of smaller things united by one concept.
Which is, of course, then also overlaid across the whole album, because the album's starting with Mouth Silence. I don't believe it's in Mouth Sound so much. They are just one full track that like blends into itself. And also is also, I believe, if you put Piss and Goodbye next to each other, they also run into each other as well. So if you listen to the album in full, there is no stopping point. It's just one song bleeds into another. Sometimes they bleed into another by just sort of instantly changing. Like Best itself, the last part of Best is the sample of Foo Fighters saying Best, and then it just hard cuts into the next track, Pokemon.
Well, specifically though, that is at the end of the Pokemon theme, where it says I want to be the very best. So that, yes, is more of a conceptual transition.
Yes.
But yeah, like it's sort of a DJ set sort of thing. You know, a lot of albums by DJs like the Avalanches or DJ Shadow will do this sort of continuous mix. I think it's fitting then that a mashup album would do the same thing, because I mean, yeah, it's like you're already mixing all these different songs together. Why wouldn't you just mix the songs together?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if that came out right, but yeah, there's a lot of these like transitions of either conceptual basis or just musical basis. Like after Pokemon ends, I believe it transitions to Sexual Lion King.
Yes.
Which is Sexual Healing plus Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Oh my god. Which starts with Simba saying, Dad, wake up, and then it goes, wake up, wake up. It's so beautiful.
It cannot be understated how funny all of the Mouth albums are just constantly.
Yeah.
Like even when they sound a little more serious, just the absurdity will occasionally hit you. You know, yes. It's oh goodness. Sorry, go ahead.
I think fitting with the hamster dance and the glasses, Mouth Silence has a very animal theme to it. Cause there's Furries, which is the third track, the second like musical track. Then there is, of course, Pokemon, there's Sexual Lion King, there's Crocodile Chop, and then Hamster Dance returns in the very end.
Yeah. Roller Closer is Nine Inch Nails is Closer, which the kind of sting line of that is, I want to fuck you like an animal.
Yeah.
Although he does.
Yeah.
He censors fuck in various ways, usually with Jungle Boogie samples. Like an animal.
I forgot that appears in Roller Closer as well. So yeah, it's, I wonder if Neil's fursona is a hamster. Okay, sorry, that's enough of that. That was hard for me to say. I think, so we mentioned the concept mashups. Another thing that appears in great effect here is the soundscape edits. The most prominent one is Love Psych, which uses the music from Psycho, along with the vocals from Love Shack, which just makes it sound absolutely terrifying.
Yes.
The glitter on the highway part, especially, is wonderfully done. There's also Organon Girls, which makes California Girls into like this vaporwavy sort of trance sort of sound. That's just like, yeah, kind of misty in a way. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, it's the sort of auditory, like you said, it's a landscape in a very, well, vaporwave is actually a very, very good good comparison, because like with vaporwave, a lot of the I'm going to say imagery of vaporwave that sort of it brings up is 80s imagery. And specifically, the impression I get is that vaporwave is always sort of made a lot of the time to, if you could close your eyes and imagine. I'm sorry, I completely talked over your joke.
No, it's fine. I was trying to talk under your serious talk.
But it's made so that if you close your eyes, you can kind of picture in your head, like, I'm in my DeLorean, I'm speeding down the highway, passing, you know, palm trees, and it's the 80s, and,
yeah, like, you know. It's using the power of, like, sounds that are commonly associated with images to call to mind those images.
Yes. One of my favorite examples of that is the exact next song, Born to Cat, which is Bent Fabrique's, I do not know if that's how you pronounce it, Alley Cat, which is a ragtimey tune to Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run. And Born to Run is a very like, it's a dour song. It's very like living the highway outlaw life of, say, the 1960s, because you have nothing else. But with the addition of Alley Cat, it sounds like a 1920s like bootleggers theme.
Yeah,
you know, it still sounds kind of dark, but in my head, what I imagine is, like, you know, going to the speakeasy for a hit of moonshine before I put, you know, stuff into my jalopy and run from the coppers.
Yeah. I think the thing is, like, there's a lot of experimental musicians before Neil that have done soundscape related work. You know, there's stuff like John Cage, but there's also like Genesis did this in The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. If you listen to songs like I can't remember the song, actually. It's something about boats. Anyways, but that album has a lot of those things where it's like, it's songs that aren't meant to be melodic or rhythmic. They're meant to evoke imagery and theme and concept. And yeah. I think Neil's strength is that he does it with existing songs. And this is sort of a theme in all of Neil's work. If you look at all of his work across things, is he likes to use pop culture, but he doesn't use it in a way that either criticizes it or appreciates it.
Yes.
I think it's sort of like Neil's work tends to acknowledge that we are so surrounded by pop culture that we become intimate with it. And so when he uses it in unexpected ways, like using the Folgers jingle, it doesn't sound like a corporate jingle being put into a song. Like, it's not jarring. Instead, you just kind of laugh it off because, like, oh, of course it sounds good here. It's like I said, an acknowledgement that we exist surrounded by pop culture.
Yes, this is one of my favorite things about the Mouth album, the whole Mouth experience.
Right.
Is that it in a way it's almost like he's reclaiming sort of corporate Muzak style stuff where, like, it isn't a criticism, like you said, but it is taking various corporate properties, like the Folgers jingle, or like in Mouth Dreams, the Yahoo, and it just makes it good. It makes it
listenable.
Yes, and you know, he also does this with things like Pokemon. Pretty much all the lyrics of Pokemon are just, thank you very much.
It's like news broadcasts and TV broadcasts of people getting mad and talking about Pokemon.
Yeah, and like it's great because, like, it's not about, it's not explicitly about, like, making fun of, you know, the parent, like, you know, the outrage around Pokemon at the at its height or anything like that. And it's all in like 300 megabytes, which is in Mouth of Moods, right?
Yeah.
Is specifically just audio from a Shopping Channel bit that was, I believe, talking about a computer at the time. And like it's like you exactly like you said, it's just presenting it and making something from it, but it isn't explicitly saying this is good, this is bad. And that's what's so interesting, is that it's the reason it works so well is because it's just taking pop culture, it's taking top 40 hits, it's taking really popular songs from all like a long timeline and just presenting them with a new spin.
This isn't something that is related to the albums, I don't think, but Neil has a song on his YouTube channel called Aaron, which is Aaron Carter's That Time I Beat Shaq or whatever it's called. But it's like a remix of it, but it takes place in his house, the music video, and it's just filled with pop culture paraphernalia. And like the whole video is him just messing around with the pop culture paraphernalia with like a GoPro on his hand. But it's like that video is the perfect summary of his work. Because if you look at like Animutations, those are all using images from pop culture. Like I think Colin Mochrie is in them, or like the Harry Potter book covers, JJ the Jet Plane. If you look at Ultimate Showdown, that song, which is one of his more popular Lemon Demon songs, is based around just what if these characters fought. You know, it's like all these different things he does are based around this idea of like it's pop culture. I think my brother said, I can't tell if Neil Cicierega likes or hates pop culture, and that's sort of the position it's always in, is like you'd have to like it enough to come up with these things, but you'd also have to hate it enough to tarnish these things, you know?
Yeah.
Like you said, to make people mad about All-Star being mixed with Modest Mouse.
Yeah. I think that's probably... to talk about Neil himself for a minute, of the, like, I'll say creatorless creators on the internet, I think that's one of the best things about his work. And this isn't an indictment of any of the creators I'm about to say. But like, for example, Andrew Hussey, who's another sort of like internet creator who doesn't have an internet presence, is like, you can, if you look at his work, you can sort of tell what he likes and what he doesn't. You can sort of tell that he has, you know, he has something critical to say about fandom. He has something critical to say about other things.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Toby Fox is another example I would think of, because like he has something to say about
anime
fandom.
Earthbound.
He has something to say about Earthbound and fandom,
something
and,
to say about Homestuck
and no. Game theory.
But no, yeah.
Whereas Neil Cicierega, it's not that he doesn't have anything to say about it, because he obviously does. One of the Lemon Demon albums, Touchtone Telephone, I believe, my roommate has made the case that it is entirely about capitalism. I have not listened to it. I could not say.
I could see some of it, but yeah. We can get into that another day.
Yeah, but like, What's great about the Mouth Silence discography is that it's the reason it works so well is because it isn't making a judgment statement on a lot of the content that is with it.
So I actually think it's funny you mentioned Pokemon, because I think that's one of the songs in the quadrilogy that directly comments on what it's talking about. To me, it's so hard to take any of the broadcasters seriously when put to the Jackson 5 backing music. Especially when, like, the televangelist comes on. Like,
yes.
For me, the music makes it silly. And, I mean, that could just be my impression, but I think that's one of the only ones where it seems like he's directly saying, like, these people are being silly enough that I can put the Jackson 5 to it.
Yes, and... that is an incredibly valid reading as well.
Yeah.
Is that, like, when I say, like, it isn't saying anything, let me back that up. I'm not saying it isn't saying anything, but it's more that the experience of mouth.
The mouth feel.
The. The mouth experience is, it's so much seems to be just, I'm just repeating myself, aren't I?
Yeah, it's not hypercritical. It's barely critical at all.
Yeah, but you do make a good point that, like, various things about that are, like, you can read into it and see what he is saying. In some sense, but okay, hang on. Probably this entire bit needs to just be cut out because I'm now just rambling.
All right. Before we move on, I do want to mention
sponsors.
I do want to mention the song Numbers, which you briefly mentioned before, but it is a bunch of songs relating to phone calls. So Call Me Maybe, Spiderwebs, Jenny, Don't Change Your Number. 8675309. Which, by the way, is a real phone number. Like, what an asshole. but it also has these commercials of, like, phone services where you can call people. Like, obviously, phone sex hotlines. But also, there's, like, one for calling He-Man and She-Ra. And one for calling Corey Feldman. And I think part of the, like, corporate reclaiming that he does, it's the time version of a soundscape. This and Pokemon both do that to me. Is it's like, yes. It's not that they're calling a location or imagery, is they're calling a time period.
Yeah, yeah.
So the time period where Pokemon was new and the time period where phone services were a thing.
Yeah, like Pokemon is very, like, you know, late 90s, mid 90s, where, you know, video games are still this cultural question mark of, like, people, you know, parents don't entirely trust it, but people, like, you know, kids still love it, but also there's problems with it, quote unquote, and a lot of, like, news media that's meant to just sort of scare parents is talking about it, whereas the Numbers is, I mean, you can't listen to that and not think of just the 80s, because we don't have Numbers anymore like that. We don't have Call He-Man. We have He-Man on TV.
Yeah.
Side note, She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, wonderful show. You should listen to it. Different show. Anyway. But, like, it's this perfect landscape, especially because he also uses he uses a lot of 80s songs as well in that one, where he uses Ghostbusters, he uses Space Oddity, he uses 8675309, and so, like, you know, he does also use Call Me Maybe, he does also use other songs, but it's just tailored to bring you to this time and evoke this mood.
Right.
Speaking of moods.
Yeah, Mouth Moods, the third album in the series, released in January 2017, so 3 years after Mouth Silence. I remember when it was released. I don't know why that's important.
That's the fun fact for this one. No, I remember listening to it.
In this case, in the glasses, it is Larry King, which is sort of another thematic through line in this case. I was going to say, I feel like you could kind of explain the sound that Neil develops over time as five TVs playing in unison. And this is most apparent in Mouth Moods, which is sort of like a news broadcast at times.
Yes.
So the first song is the starting line. It is the return of Smash Mouth All-Star. We are back in the Smash Mouth timeline. The starting line is great because it's made entirely out of the first line of many songs. It's the first song in the album, of course, and it includes of the starting line of Cake's The Distance, where he says, reluctantly crouched at the starting line. I think what's most important about this is it does not only All-Star. Compare it to Promenade Satellite Pictures at an Exhibition, which was just All-Star. This is like All-Star surrounded by other songs. Yes. It has Somebody Once Told Me, but it's not the only song. And I think that's sort of like a statement, you know, because every other song, every other album has like a sort of chopped up, not really a mashup as its starting song. But this one is probably the most melodic, the most musical of them. And yeah, I think it's sort of a reuniting of songs together.
Yeah.
And like All-Star appears elsewhere in the album, but it's not as prominent as Mouth Sounds.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of thesis whereby Mouth Sounds is not all about All-Star, but very much about All-Star. And Mouth Silence is obviously very much about not having All-Star, except for the little Easter eggs. But Mouth Moods seems like a statement of, I will have All-Star, and I will have some of the more popular meme songs, but the intent of this is entirely just what sounds good in this context.
Right. So I think the cover of the album is interesting because it is like two-tone orange and blue. To me, this could be just a Game Theory type thing, but it feels like that's like the two worlds of Mouth Sounds, which was All-Star in like kind of basic mashups, and Mouth Silence, which is more of a concept album, combining into one album.
Yes.
Some of the early songs on the album I want to mention are ACVC, which has a threatening name. This is one where I saw the name ACVC and I just thought, oh no. Because it starts with the piano of 1,000 miles, and you immediately know what the VC is. You're just waiting on the edge for the AC to hit.
Yeah.
Which is Back in Black. It's that's what I mean by, like, it's the setup in a punchline, is that by setting it up in such a way where you have the VC part answered immediately, you just kind of helplessly wait for the rest of the song to start. Same with Floor Corn, which is popcorn and Let the Bodies Hit the Floor.
Yes.
Which is not the name of the song. It's called Drowning. I think. I could be wrong. Or is it Bodies? It is called...
It's Bodies.
Bodies. Well, excuse me, princess. So there's also 300 Megabytes, which you mentioned as another like very corporate one. It uses the Proclaimers kind of screaming from 500 Miles, which, by the way, it comes after 1,000 Miles in ACVC.
Yes.
So, but note that in 500 Miles, he says, I would walk 500 more. So really, they're walking the same distance.
Sorry, just
a Gift of the Magi parody where Vanessa Carlson walks towards the Proclaimer's house and they walk towards her house and then they realize they've both gone to the other's house.
For Christmas, I walked 500 miles
and For I walked Christmas. 500 more. But yeah, Revolution number 5 is kind of high concept in that it's a parody of Revolution number 9 by the Beatles, but with Lou Bega saying number 5. But it's panning between the left and right channels to give the illusion of him revolving around you.
Yes. And actually, that's another another good through line is the left and right channels will be separated in various songs. I don't know if it's like... I'm not about to sit here and say that's something that only Neil Cicero does, but like, He uses that to great effect. In the previous album, Mouth Silence, Space Monkey Mafia is probably the most obvious and, in my opinion, best example of that, whereby he has We Didn't Start the Fire and It's the End of the World as We Know It playing in two different channels, both songs that are, you know, both songs that have similar feels and similar vibes and are similarly, like, hard to sing songs, but, like, just... It feels like a panic attack, you know, right, where just you can't focus on both songs at the same time.
Right.
But moving back to Mouth Moods, yeah, he Revolution number 5, as you mentioned, is very like high concept. And you go ahead, because
yeah, so it does that to give the illusion of him revolving around you, but also there is All-Star and Usher saying Happy Easter Xbox that are played in reverse, which is a kind of parody of how people thought Revolution number 9 had a hidden backmasked message. Backmasked. There we go. that leads into Dear Dinosaur, which uses Dear Prudence, which is from the same Beatles album as number 9, but with Walk the Dinosaur and the intro to the Super Mario Brothers movie. So that's pretty fun. There's another sort of conceptual transition. But so then it goes into Annoyed Grunt, which is one of yes. many parallels Mouth Moods does. Mouth Moods has a lot of songs that are like similar to previous songs, but different. In this case, Annoyed Grunt is a parallel to Doe from Mouth Sounds.
Yes.
It's very similar structurally as like, you know, a bunch of small added samples over and over again.
I mean, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, it does also specifically have Doe in it more than
so
a couple of times.
Annoyed Grunt is actually what the subtitles of The Simpsons say whenever Homer says Doe. And it's what the script of The Simpsons says whenever Homer needs to say Doe.
I did not actually know that. That is a really interesting Easter egg.
Yeah, so it's directly related to Doe in that regard. In this case, it also uses a whole bunch of other things. It uses Korn's Freak on a Leash, as well as Down with the Sickness, to kind of add to that grunting sound.
Yeah, there are some lyrics taken from some of the songs, specifically MIA's Paper Planes comes to mind, but
and in the summertime. a lot of
the actual quote-unquote lyrics are the various vocalizations. It's the ooh wah ooh, it's all of the annoyed grunts of the various songs.
So here's where Larry King comes in, because he starts off this song by saying, how do you explain Tim Allen? Which then goes into the Home Improvement theme, which goes into the, which is another annoyed grunt. He also says,
that was actually a really good Tim Allen grunt.
Thanks. He also says Phil Collins is next, and then it plays the drums from In the Air Tonight. But then at the end of Annoyed Grunt, it's the Larry King interview with Ray Parker Jr. No, not with Ray Parker Jr., shoot, who's the actor from Ghostbusters? So it's Larry King's interview with, I want to say, Dan Aykroyd. But it's somebody from Ghostbusters telling a story about how they had sex with a ghost. This leads into Bustin', which is the single from Mouth Moods. As in, it was released separately on YouTube first. And maybe one of the most well-known songs from the series?
And honestly, for very good reason.
Yeah. I completely forgot. Another type of song that appears a lot in the Mouth series, I was going to mention it in Mouth Silence, is the audio YouTube poop, for lack of a better term. But it's basically, it's more about remixing the vocals, using like sentence mixing where it moves around vowels and words to make new sentences and phrases, to change the meaning of the song, not just in terms of like its feel and its aesthetic, but in terms of its actual lyrics. In this case, it is about having sex with ghosts in sleeping.
Yeah. And honestly, a little bit more sleeping than having sex with ghosts.
I ain't afraid of no sleep.
Sleep. I ain't afraid of no bed.
Yeah. That's definitely really prominent in this album, with Bustin', of course.
Yeah, it's honestly, I'd honestly say that it might be most prevalent in the next album, which we'll get to.
Right.
But you see a lot of it in this album with like Tiger, which kind of like appends a lot of Eye of the Tiger by just saying Tiger, but in a very in a very funny way. You have to take our word for this.
I was going to say it really first appears with Wonderwall and Piss. Piss especially becomes a song about drinking piss.
Small note as well. The last song of Mouth Silence is Piss, and the last song of Mouth Moods is Shit.
Yes, that's another parallel.
Yes.
So Bustin' is followed by Blockbuster, which is just a Blockbuster commercial, and then Busta, which is No Scrubs put over Dream On. Or no, it's Stairway to Heaven, even better than Dream On.
It's so good.
But yeah, so that's like three Busta related songs in a row. Then there's Time, T-I-M-E. This is another soundscape that uses YMCA's lyrics over Hans Zimmer's Time from Interstellar, which just makes YMCA sound incredibly epic and motivational.
Yeah, it makes YMCA feel big. Yeah. Because, like, Time itself is a track that already kind of, like, makes anything sound grand and epic. And YMCA put over that just... It becomes this massive, like, culture-shaking thing.
Yeah.
Also, you did... I do just want to specifically mention one of my favorite tracks, The End, which is Linkin Park's In The End, put over the Doobie Brothers as What a Fool Believes, and it's one of my favorites just because, like, there is no sentence mix, like,
there's a tiny
Neil bit. as we mentioned, like, from Mouth Sounds on, a lot of it becomes about, like, a lot more like the piss type tracks or the sentence takes. Mixing tracks the piss takes, but he does still have more than a few songs that are just the music of one and the lyrics of another, to some varying extent. And In The End is one of my favorite songs just because Linkin Park's In The End sounds better over funk than the normal song.
Yeah.
Than the normal In The End. I cannot listen to the normal In The End unless it is with unless it is with the Doobie Brothers as What a Fool Believes.
Yeah. So then we have Smooth, which is sort of a parallel to Melt Everyone from the first album. In this case, it combines 1 week with Bare Naked Ladies. Oh no, that is 1 week with Michael Jackson's Smooth Criminal. But it has a little bit of Smooth by Rob Thomas, Matchbox 20, Santana, all that added in as well. I kind of feel like, so Smooth is more or less of a meme song, and I think it's one of the more meme songs, more so than most other songs on this album that are sampled. I almost feel like it's in here as like, hey, look, I used another meme song other than Smash Mouth. It's honestly kind of respectable to me that Neil isn't like tied by using meme songs. Like, there's no Megalovania, there's no like Reese's Puffs rap. There's no Kanye West in most of these.
Yeah, it's very, he puts in what he wants in the songs at this point just because he wants them in there. Like, the first one was made as the sort of like bait and switch, make you angry because they sound good, because they, you know, shouldn't go together, but they do. Whereas at this point, and you know, like at this point, it's really just making things sound good. And so, like, it's like he exists in his own dimension outside of current cultural landscape with just enough overlap, because it isn't about making a meme album. It's about making an album that has some memes, but also just has a lot of funny mixes or just sounding good mixes.
Yeah. And I think the last three songs on the album are like, there didn't even need to be a fourth album to me. These three are like peak perfection for each of their styles.
Yes.
So there is Wow Wow, which is sort of a parallel with Vivid Memories in that it's another Will Smith song based on one of his movies. This time it's about Wild Wild West, but it has a whole lot of sentence mixing with some very great lines, like trying to draw Jim West with a pen and a pad and break out before you get bees. Where he got his behind looking good dough.
Yes. Oh,
it's,
God.
It's just nonstop, like, just one-liners made out of the original song. that is kind of hard to get on your first listen. So try to find one with lyrics, because it's very good.
Yes, it is.
There's also like this like boing, like cartoon sound effect, like the most stock sound effect you've ever heard for a boing.
It cannot be understated that it is also put over, like, is it?
It's I Kid don't know Rock's if it's I Want to Be a Cowboy. I'm pretty sure.
Okay, like I didn't know if that was an original. Like original music he put over it, because he does also through a lot of these put over original music. Not all of it is 100% just borrowing other music. A lot of it is also his own original compositions, but like it is put over just this industrial techno sounding wonderful song that just like pops and like it punches you in the stomach. It's so good.
Yeah, it has like very powerful like percussion or synth. I don't even know what it is, but it's just like every three beats it goes dum dum dum. It's just so strong. I agree, it punches you in the stomach.
And then, and what's even greater is that it transitions into one of the probably the most low-key song on the album, which is Mouth Pressure.
Yeah.
And that's just All-Star set to Under Pressure.
But it this is one of my favorite of the straightforward mashups, because it is just, it makes All-Star sound so like hopeful and optimistic. Like it's already kind of hopeful of a song, but like the key change in put with Under Pressure, it makes it sound so dramatic, but like as it crescendos towards the end of the song, you know, what that would normally be like the why don't we give ourselves one more chance. It just picks up in intensity, and it just sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like Smash Mouth is just screaming out for like triumph.
Yeah, to talk parallel for a second, Smash Mouth's All-Star, the original intent, I suppose, is actually sort of like a little bit of a critique, kind of. The original intent with All-Star is that the singer is kind of just a clueless idiot and is just sort of like live and let live, but like to an absurd extent where like it's just sort of like, you know, whatever, nothing really matters, who cares? It's that, you know, you can, when you really like buckle down and listen to the lyrics and like think about it a little too much, I'd even say, you can kind of see that where it's like, you know, the ice we skating is getting pretty thin. The water's getting warm. You might as well swim. My world's on fire. How about yours? That's the way I like and I'll never get bored. Where it's like, you know, it's an escalation of like things are progressively getting worse, but I just don't care.
Can we talk about how that whole verse starts cold and then it gets hot?
Yes, that is.
Also,
I believe that's actually a specific like thing that you have pointed out before to me, is like the progression of that verse is so perfect.
Also, how the chorus has a Shakespeare reference in it to Merchant of Venice.
All that glitters is gold?
Yeah. The original line is all that glitters is not gold. Saying like, you know, everything that's shiny isn't necessarily good and valuable.
Yeah. And that's like that moves back to the like, you know, kind of like hapless idiot reading where it's like, if it glitters, it must be gold. You know, he takes things at face value. Yeah.
Also,
and that's the, yeah, go ahead.
Also, the song was originally made for the movie Mystery Men.
That I didn't know.
Yeah, it wasn't originally made for Shrek, nor was it made for Smash Mouth.
Huh.
So that's actually, you know, that fits with the clueless idiot reading.
Yeah. And like, I think one of my favorite trends with that song, not, and this isn't specific to Neil, but like kind of with the whole cultural landscape, the whole meme song culture with it, is that that's almost sort of been reclaimed, where like, it's not a song about a hapless idiot anymore. A lot of times when it's reclaimed in more than just a haha, I put All-Star over this manner, which again, to reiterate, is valid. Just making a song that's funny is valid. But like, a lot of the reclaiming with that song does have that like weirdly hopeful bent, weirdly like, you know, hey, at the end of it, things might be okay.
Even though the world is on fire.
Yeah. I would say that my favorite version of this is not a mashup, but is the version of All Star, the cover of All Star specifically made for Shrek Retold, does a really good job of like contextualizing it in a sort of modern sense, where it's not about the hapless idiot. It's about like this, you know, community, this like shared feeling of, you know, just happiness and, you know, camaraderie that like at the end of everything, even if the world's on fire, maybe if we're together, things will be okay.
You know, it's interesting to think about All-Star's legacy. So I was playing the game Fuser, which is a game by Harmonix where you kind of make mashups and DJ mixes on the fly. And one of the songs they include in the game is All-Star. And it's sort of like All-Star's legacy isn't just being in a movie or being in another movie or being a hit by a band that started as a ska band. Listen to Pedrino, by the way. Great song. It has gone out of its own control. It's like it's part of the internet now. It is, its legacy extends out because people make fun of it, because it's sort of a joke, but because people also mash it up to the point where it isn't a game with the overt purpose of mashing up. We're not even done with the album series, though.
Yeah.
Mouth Moods ends with Shit, which is like piss. It's about shit, though.
I'm sorry, just like the instant transition from like, you know, kind of talking about like, man, it's part of the internet culture and like things are like, this is actually sort of more than the sum of its parts and it's great. Shit, anyway, back to Mouth. Piss is better than shit.
So Shit is interesting to me. For one thing, it has more sentence mixing. It has My Way or the Highway, Wannabe by the Spice Girls. It has Hollaback Girl by Gwen Stefani. Like, it has a bunch of different songs that make up its main... Pretty Fly for a White Guy. It has, like, all these songs that make up its main vocals. But, like, every single instrumental is from something different. Like, the bass is from Where is the Love? I can't even remember what, like, the horns are from. But, yeah. Like, if you look at the sample list in that Mouth Experience video I was talking about, especially to get an idea of it, because then you can see how it's all compared to the other songs, is like everything. Let's see, there's also ELO's Don't Bring Me Down, Everybody Dance Now is the like guitar, you know. It has apparently a sample from Raffi's version of Banana Phone, Paul Simon's You Can Call Me Owl, Down With the Sickness, My Own Worst Enemy by Lit. Like, all these are sampled, but it's in a way that you can't really tell because it's, like, just one track.
Yeah.
And this is why I think this is, like, the tour de force, if you will, is that Wow Wow is, like, all sentence mixing, but also has some original stuff. Mouth Pressure is just the straightforward mashup. And then this is, like, mashing up very specific parts of the songs, as if to say, I can make a brand new song out of existing songs because I can isolate the bass, you know, not like it's him bragging, but that's what it seems to me like is using the skills that he's developed to make something so far removed from their original purpose, but you can still recognize it as the thing. You can still recognize those beeps and buzzes from Everybody Dance Now or the bass from Where is the Love. It becomes almost like its own Easter egg hunt or scavenger hunt by being like, ooh, I know that sample. I know that sample.
Which like kind of ties it back to the first song as well of the starting line, where it's done very differently with the starting line because it's just a bunch of specific isolated bits that like is not mixed nearly as like intensely as that, but it's that Easter egg hunt idea of like taking one bit from this song and just sort of putting them all together in a melodic fashion and sort of throwing it out to the world and saying, figure it out.
Can I just say, if you're in like a college a cappella group and you need to find the perfect song, do the starting line. I just want to see like an a cappella rendition where everybody starts out doing one of the different intro parts.
Oh God, yes. That would be the best. Please just, do that. Yeah. Someone, anyone.
I swear. All right. So yeah, so that was Mouth Moods, and now we are to talk about the final album as of now, Mouth Dreams, released in September 30th of 2020. Note that date. It's very important. Because I guess to just go into it. So the album was teased with the song My Mouth, which appears on the album, which samples Green Day's Brain Stew and Aerosmith's Dream On. So you can already see the dream theme coming along.
Yes.
But the release date is a Green Day joke, because Green Day has the song Wake Me Up When September Ends. So Mouth Dreams was released on the end of September. If you think of it like the dream state was making the album, then September 30th is when it wakes up and is released.
Yes, and I would say this is probably the most explicit of like what the theme of the album is.
Yeah, it's the most direct concept album.
Yeah.
It does have a fair share of Easter eggs, though. So, the glasses depict Ewoks, which is something that appears much later in the album. The glasses also, when you increase the exposure on the image, it has wingdings that say MD. Note the wingdings. let's see, the metadata has another message similar to Mouth Silences, but it says, I can't think of a secret message.
Which is wonderful.
But there are other secret messages. So the cover has sparkles on some of the letters, which when read out spell nice modems. I'm pretty sure this is a reference to Mario Galaxy, where the two games had little stars on the letters.
And if you read them out, it's Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah, but this is just like taking that dumb joke and turning it into just saying nice modems. But then also the metadata for every song is listed as being made in May 3rd, 2099. So a century after All Star. And then finally, the extro of the album, Mouth Sounds Extro, or Mouth Dreams Extro. It has a little bit of All-Star audible, but also in its spectrogram, it has wingdings, which when reversed and read as characters, it says, do not trust Shrek. Okay, so the first song is Yahoo.
Also, hang on a second. I don't think we actually explained the joke. Super Mario Galaxy, yeah. If you read just the starred letters, it is U-R-M-R-G-A-Y, which is read as You Are Mr. Gay, which caused not really controversy, but was just sort of like, it was an unfortunate little thing that they didn't realize and was kind of memed for a little bit.
And then
bit,
Super basically. Mario Galaxy 2 had it spell out, yeah, I am, are you? So like, yeah, what about it? You have a problem? Yahoo, best start to any of the albums. It is just the Yahoo jingle, but it is played a few times, then it's pitch shifted, then it's added to a synth from, I don't actually know what.
I don't know if the synth is from anything, because I think it's just an original, like, an original overture. Right.
But then the Yahoos start to harmonize. That's when it just kicks in. It's like, you are in for a treat.
Yes, it's Wunderwall in Mouth Silence does the harmonizing very well, and like just leading with that kind of harmonizing is so perfect,
especially
for Mouth Dreams,
especially because Yahoo fits with the theme of like corporate reclaiming, of taking jingles and messing with them into fun ways, and it turns it into this genuine like heartfelt song.
Yeah.
That goes into a sort of Twilight Zone intro, where it's literally the Twilight Zone, but sentence mixed.
Yeah, it's it is the Twilight Zone sentence mixed to tell you what kind of world you're entering. And what kind of world you're entering is a world. Oh gosh, I just listened to it.
A world of breaks glass. A world of dimensions. Behind this door is a world of another door. Behind that door is dimensions. And then mouth dreams, of course.
Yes.
So here's my sort of headcanon of the album's progression. To me, it seems like the Twilight Zone is the universe where Smash Mouth didn't exist. And then when they fall asleep and wake up, they realize they've been in a dream. And that's why All-Star reappears in Extro. That's why the metadata is a century after All-Star. Maybe All-Star was just dormant in the last 100 years where it should have been. I don't know. But anyways, I feel like that's my headcanon. I do view everything after My Mouth as a dream sequence.
Yeah, that fits very well, especially because if I'm correct, All-Star, yeah, the only showing up of All-Star is specifically Mouth Dreams Extro, and it is coupled with System of a Down's Chop Suey, specifically the part where they say wake up. And so, like, the idea of, yeah, I think that is an interesting take, because, like, it's currently in the mouth. Hang on, for clarity, are you saying that we are currently in the dimension of All-Star, and then the another world is the dimension that it doesn't exist in?
Yes, the Twilight Zone is the Mouth Silence verse. In that we only escape it by waking up from mouth dreams.
Yes. That would actually make a lot of sense too, considering like how it's bounced back and forth from mouth sounds is with All-Star, silence is without, moods is with, and then dreams subsequently is without.
Yeah. Or maybe it's still part of the alternate universe, but Smash Mouth was dormant for 100 years, only waking up in 2099.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing Mouth Moods is like the harmony verse, where Smash Mouth lives in harmony with all of the other songs. And then Mouth Dreams is the nightmare verse, where after 100 years it has awoken. And do not trust Shrek. Okay. So the first song after the intro is what is it? Sponge Rock?
Yes.
Will Rocky's backing, but with the SpongeBob theme. This is another one where, like, I saw the name Sponge Rock and I was just on the edge of my seat. Like, I don't want to know what happens next. And then it just hits you.
Oh, and it delivers. It delivers, too, because it only happens very occasionally throughout the albums where, like, he will do the lyrics and music of two different songs, and then he will switch them where it's now the lyrics of the other song and then the music of the other song. But like Mouth or Sponge Rock does that to the best effect, where it starts as the stomp stomp clap from We Will Rock You and the lyrics from the SpongeBob theme. But then it switches whereby Freddie Mercury sings We Will Rock You.
Of the planets.
Queen Mercury. Freddie Mercury starts singing We Will Rock You over the end credits of SpongeBob.
Yeah, like the ukulele end credits.
Yeah.
It's great. My favorite thing, when I was listening to this with my brother, he was like, are they going to do the... And I was like, yeah. And then, sure enough, they do the SpongeBob... like calling that the kids in the song do along to the we will rock you rhythm. It's so perfect. It's like, of course he would do that. Like, you can't just set that up and not spike it.
Yes,
but he spikes it very hard. There's, as far as the pre-dream sequence songs, Just a Baby is a really good one. That's sort of a sentence mixing one.
Yes.
About Johnny Cash being a baby train.
Who's in prison.
Yeah.
Baby prison.
Yeah. Justin Bieber's baby also makes an appearance on that song, of course. There's Super Killer, which is Talking Heads' Psycho Killer over Rick James' Super Freak, which is just... It also has a lot of, like, sentence mixing jokes. I've seen a lot of people reference the bed's on fire.
Yes.
Don't touch my bed.
Oh, goodness.
There's not much to say thematically until Get Happy is really interesting. Get Happy is the Partridge Family theme, but edited in such, like, a way that is just, like, it feels the most DJ-esque song. Like, I could see, like, the Avalanches or C2C doing this song.
Yeah.
Like, it's more or less just a loop of some of the lines from the Partridge Family theme with, like, this really hectic music that almost sounds like a birthday party. It's very aggressively happy.
Yeah.
And then that goes into my favorite song in the album, by the way.
Ribs?
Yes. It starts with the Baby Back Ribs jingle. You know, the Baby Back, Baby Back. And then it goes into Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. And then it just adds a Marilyn Manson song on, because, like, why not? And then, of course, it adds The Lion Sleeps Tonight, because it has this, like, jungle feel to it already. My favorite thing is, so for one thing, he just briefly sentence mixes the Marilyn Manson song, so it says, "You can't smell your own knees." I like to think that's a reference to Wow Wow, which also was very centered around knees for some reason. But also just the imagery of, like, Outback Steakhouse combined with The Lion Sleeps Tonight. It's so powerful. I just picture, like, a little house on a jungle, like, right outside the jungle, and then there's a lion sleeping with baby back ribs. It's oddly, like, pleasant at times.
Yeah, I mean, that really just calls back to the corporate reclaiming, where just, you know, the baby back ribs jingle is, it's a bop. It sounds really good, and it's so it's so meaningless outside of that context, except, like, it's so meaningless outside of the original context of it's for Chili's to sell baby back ribs, so Neil kind of just reclaims it.
Yeah.
Neil just makes it his own, because, hey, you know what this sounds like, sounds good with The Lion Sleeps Tonight. Why not?
Yeah. So after that, there's My Mouth, which we mentioned is the start of the dream sequence. From there, it's a lot of smaller songs, for the most part, that kind of just jump from one to the other, as yes. A dream might. It has Air Along, which is also unironically a banger to me.
Yes.
It's Everlong mixed with Don't Want to Miss a Thing. But I want to miss a thing.
Yeah, it's sentence mixed pretty much like only two words, because it's I don't miss you, baby, and I do want to miss a thing.
I do want to close my eyes. I want to sleep. Which, you know, it's just the singer really wants to sleep. Then there is Sleepin', which is an edit of My Own Worst Enemy by Lit, but it's pretty much just about sleeping with my clothes on. and then there's Amore, where I like to think the singer finally fell asleep because they had too much wine.
Yeah,
it's an edit of That's Amore, but it is very drunk. It repeats itself, it slurs words, it mixes words around in bells.
It mixes words around in, like, such a perfectly imperfect way, where it's like, when the moon hits When the moon hits a big pizza pie like your eye, that's amore.
And then it says bells and bells play. Yeah. Like, on command, the power to summon bells. But the best part is that the backup singers then repeat it word for word. Like, they're just following along with what the main singer is saying. Like, yeah, he said, like, your eye, that's amore. I guess that's what we gotta say. So yeah, fell asleep having too much wine. There's Where Is My Mom, which is sort of a soundscape, sort of just a tonal shift, where it makes Stacy's mom sound just sort of empty. Sorry, I'm kind of thumbing through the track here, because I like all of these in sort of a different way. But yeah, I also don't know what much else there is to say on some of them until we get to Fred Hammer. It's so good. It's Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel mixed with Nookie by Limp Bizkit. I don't know how to explain why I find this so good. It's just like Fred Durst, Limp Bizkit's just kind of already a joke. So the only thing you can do is punch it up to make it sound good. And they do this with Sledgehammer.
I will say, if there's any, it's not even a criticism, if there's any quote-unquote criticism that I would have of this entire album, it's that I would say of all of the albums, it's the hardest to find, like, it's the hardest to not listen to the entire thing to.
Yeah.
It's the hardest to find, like, just one song, because it all blends together in such a wonderful way. But it also feels like if you just sort of specifically take out one, it doesn't like have the same impact. Like the only one I would say you could maybe do that with is Sponge Rock. I could listen to just that song on repeat.
I have Ribs in my playlist.
That's entirely valid.
And too. Fred Hammer. Fred Hammer, though, also. For one thing, I just want to say, it has a sample of Mario saying the word Tanuki from Mario Kart 8. I almost didn't catch that it was Mario when I first listened to it, but it's just so well kind of put in without ever acknowledging it. Like, I feel like it's easy to make, not easy to make, but, you know, it's common to make a mashup where it lingers on a joke. Like, it brings up a sample, and then that sample is heavily incorporated. I mean, Neil does this all the time with, like, Annoyed Grunt and Best. I feel like those kind of, like, they don't just sample something once and say, there it is. It's like, it keeps bringing it back. Whereas just having Mario say Tanuki is such, it's like a jump scare in musical form, but not scary. It's like a pie in the face. It's that it just happens once, it's gone, and you just go, wait a minute. That wasn't Fred Durst. But it goes into Limp Wicket, which is it uses the Ewok celebration song by Mecco, which is just like a rap with Ewok words. Yeah. And that's where the Ewoks come in finally.
Also Wicket, Ewoks.
Yeah.
Haha. Oh goodness. I will warn you, and you might want to mark this point down. This is the part where I run out of things to say.
Yeah, me too. I'm kind of going through a few of these. Here's a fun one. Cannibals. So Cannibals. It's called Cannibals because of the song.
She Drives Me Crazy
by Fine Young Cannibals. But it starts with like a whole bunch of different TV station jingles. And it has like the THX sound. You know the one.
Yes.
But it's just such a strange image that gives to me of like having corporate jingles be the first thing you hear on the song Cannibals.
Yeah, if there is any argument against my point of like it's culture recycled, but for the sake of culture and not for a criticism aspect, aside from the Pokemon reading you mentioned, it's definitely Cannibals being just full of the reclaimed corporate products.
Yeah. I was going to say something about 300 megabytes in that also is kind of a joke about how technology moves so quickly that something that's interesting or like is impressive one day is just babies the next.
Yeah. Like
300 megabytes isn't anything to sneeze at. Or no, it's you would sneeze on it. It's nothing nowadays.
Yeah,
people use
like
terabytes.
It's presented in that with the gusto of somebody selling you an amazing product. It's 300 megabytes.
And the music of 300 megabytes is like this booming, like, I'm gonna take over the world theme. But so that's the only other, like, hypercritical one, I think.
Yeah.
After Cannibals is The Outsiders, which is a bunch of voiceovers done by, what's his name?
Don LaFontaine, who is the, like, old movie voice guy, which, man, that's a little weird to think that, like, man, we're both kind of, we're both sort of on the Zoomer side of things. It's a little weird to think that that's actually, like, not our generation. That's millennials.
Apparently, I'm what's known as a Minion Z, which is part millennial, part Gen Z. I just wish it wasn't called Minion Z.
Oh, God.
I don't want to be part of Minion Z. I'd take the other two. It could even be like Millennium Z. That at least sounds like a Yu-Gi-Oh arc.
Oh, man. I know I'm on the exact cusp of a millennial of 1996. It's weird that, like, because that is a 90s thing, but, like, that was Don LaFontaine, and the idea of the movie trailer voice, man, is something that's just not here anymore.
Right. It's something that I'm sure me and a lot of other people got through, like, decade bleed, if that makes sense.
We're cultural, like, osmosis, I like to
cultural
call it.
Cultural osmosis of a previous decade. I think that's why there's so many, like, Zoomers, quote-unquote, that say, like, you know, I'm such a 90s kid. They didn't grow up in the 90s, but they got so much 90s-related stuff that was on the out that it basically was the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
That's the weird place music is in. Because I can turn on the radio station and hear music from the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s all on one station. And you might think, like, oh, that's 80s music, that's 70s music, you know, that's 90s music. But even though they're all from different decades with distinct sounds, they all kind of exist together. And that's, I think that's why stuff like The Outsiders works on this series, is because it is acknowledging that it's essentially the original version of memes, the original definition, that they are cultural concepts that exist throughout generations.
Yeah, it's something so specific with the full mouth discography, where it's I just got a really loud Java update.
Oh no. Well, I didn't hear it.
Yep. It's something so specific with the Neil discography, because like we mentioned sort of earlier on, it's a lot of, like, top 40 hits and a lot of what was popular throughout multiple generations. And so it all blends together in a way that it kind of just becomes pop culture. Like, the joke is that it's Wario laughing and saying wah, but the music is Edwin Starr's war, huh, yeah, what is it good for, of the 70s, and Spice Girls comes in with Wannabe of the 90s, and the clips of Wario laughing are also from the 90s, like 90s to 2000s, but
specific ones are from the 2000s, but yeah.
Yeah,
it's everything kind of in a blender.
There is no generational divide with all of these. There's various things that are specifically calling back to, like you said, auditory landscapes that are used to invoke certain times, but there's nothing so specific that he can't bleed in something from 50 decades ago.
Yeah.
50 years ago is what I mean.
Okay. So, we're going pretty long. I think we need to speed this up a little bit. After The Outsiders is Johnny, which is, the music for Hurt, but the vocals of Never Gonna Give You Up. This actually has audience booing added to it. I feel like this is Neil's way of saying, like, I'm not going to do meme songs, by taking, like, the meme song in having people boo it in the track.
It's a very good statement of intent where, like, the joke of it is that he plays the most obvious meme song and the audience fucking hates it.
Yeah. And then they just kind of do a sympathy clap at the end.
Yeah.
And then it gets to Closer Flies, which honestly Fireflies is picking up steam in the mashup crowd. So I'm kind of surprised he used it. But I think, what is it? White House is when the like REM movement cycle is, because it is the most hectic, frantic, sort of hellish song.
Yeah.
First, I gotta say, the song before that is Night Movin', which has Avenged Sevenfold's Nightmare as the vocals. And I think literally this is like the nightmare sequence. So Night Movin', then White House, where it's the Pee-wee's.
Pee-wee's is later.
You're right.
Yeah, it's Powerhouse, which is a jazz arrangement heard in Looney Tunes.
Right.
It's that with White Stripes is Fell in Love with a Girl.
Right.
And it just sort of like, it's bouncy and chaotic in like a funhouse way, which continues into Pee-wee, although Wah is between them.
Yeah, Pee-wee Inc. is the breakfast machine with Feel Good Inc. And that is just more hecticness, more of like the nightmare sequence. I mean, it's kind of hard to say anything else.
Yeah.
10,000 Spoons is another like sentence mixing song.
I do actually want to quickly say, with Wah being part of the nightmare sequence, I think he was a little bit ahead. Was he ahead of the curve?
Yeah.
Of the Super Mario iceberg?
Yeah. The Mario 64 creepy pasta.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Anyway.
And then there's the Mouth Dreams Extro, but I don't think the Extro is necessarily... So, like, it is the waking up part, but I feel like the last two songs still fit as part of the dream sequence. Either that, or it is, like, the waking of Shrek, but, like, given form in music.
Yeah.
Because it has Brithoven? It's hit me maybe one more time over... Was it Beethoven's Fifth?
Yeah, Beethoven's Fifth.
Yeah. You know, it's one fifth of the whole symphony. But then there's also Ain't, which is Say It Ain't So over In the Hall of the Mountain King, which, for one thing, I've heard that In the Hall of the Mountain King was originally composed to be, like, absurdly pompous, almost satirically. But it's kind of become very threatening and menacing over time.
Yeah.
But it's most known as just being that song that crescendos and gets louder and faster and more frantic as it goes on. And it really fits Say It Ain't So, which also kind of has that. How it starts kind of slow and then builds up and builds up until this, like, desperate cry over the bridge. But yeah, I think also being in the Hall of the Mountain King, that's why I feel like if we're not to trust Shrek... That would be the waking up portion, where he is rising and he is leaving his throne.
I think if I were to sort of like read into it like that, I would say Mouth Dreams Extro is maybe the alarm, or like somebody, you know, saying, hey, you need to wake up. And Brithoven being paired with Hit Me Baby One More Time is the five more minutes.
Yeah.
So, meaning that Ain't is the, like, you know, I've got my five more minutes, I've, you know, things are getting calm, and it's like, okay, but I need to wake up, and I need to wake up, and I'm still asleep. And so, like, when it keeps getting louder, or it keeps getting more hectic and louder, and it's just, you know, you at the end of the day, you have to wake up and go do whatever you're doing.
Right.
So it's the, like, the final, like, you know, time to wake up is now or never.
Hit Me Baby One More Time is asking for 10 more minutes of sleep. And yes. Then Ain't is the gradual rising as you pull off all your covers and slip into your clothes.
Goodness.
But no, yeah, I like to think of these also as a flex. Like, yeah, I can mash up pop songs with classical compositions. It's also fittingly a bookend for the quadrilogy, because Mouth Sound started with All-Star being put over a classical composition.
We probably should be wrapping this up, because I believe we are currently going on for a little bit too long.
But so
if we were to sort of take everything as a whole, the next one is probably going to be more Mouth-oriented, considering that we seem to have bounced back and forth from the Shrek world to the not Shrek world. And with the last one, with the Mouth Dreams saying, you know, do not trust Shrek backwards, maybe we're going to get more of that, like, meta sort of reading.
Yeah.
We might get something more of a, like, concrete concept album, which I would personally be all for.
I love concept albums.
Yes.
My favorite album is sort of a concept album, and my second favorite album, not my third though. I think I wanted to say, I kind of view Neil's style as, I don't know if there's a term for it, but I would call it hyper pop culture, in that it is not just looking at pop culture the same way a Star Wars parody would or something like that. It is looking at pop culture, but overlaying so many different parts of it on top of each other, that it is sort of simulating the feeling of being constantly enveloped by the sound and the audio visuals of pop culture. It's like walking through Times Square and, like, all these different screens and, you know, people on the street. That is sort of what these albums signify in sort of all of Neil's work as a whole. It's like it's appreciative of pop culture, because without it, we wouldn't have context. But because we have context for it, it's made better. But also, like, it's critical because we kind of can't imagine our lives without these things.
Yes.
You know, that even when we sleep, we are having dreams that are assaulted by our pop culture knowledge. All right.
Yes.
Thank you for listening.
hang on. I'm thinking of something to say to add to that.
Super hang on. Okay.
No talk, head empty. I've come down from my caffeine high.
Haven't we all? Is that what you want to say?
You know what? I think that's a good point to end. I think that's a good final statement from me.
All right. Cool. Thank you so much for listening if you've stuck with this. This one and the previous episode I'll probably have up around the same time. Not sure how frequently we'll be able to do these. Hopefully more. We'll kind of play it by ear. Don't have many plans in stone for what the next episodes will be, but I've got a lot of stuff I want to talk about.
Yes, as do I. As you know, the era of Gen Z and millennial who grew up on the internet, we've consumed a lot of internet content, and we have a lot of thoughts about it. So I'm very excited to help you all surf the net like a pro.
See ya.
Bye.